The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Morning, everyone.
I'd like to start with a poem from Rumi. It's called Only Breath. Not Christian or Jew or Muslim, not Hindu, Buddhist, Sufi or Zen, not any religion or cultural system. I am not from the East or the West, nor out of the ocean or up from the ground, not natural or ethereal, not composed of elements at all. I do not exist. Am not an entity in this world or in the next. Did not descend from Adam and Eve or any origin story. My place is placeless, a trace of the traceless, neither body or soul. I belong to the beloved. Having seen the two worlds as one, and that one call to and know, first, last, outer, inner, Oni, that breath-breathing human being. I'm done. It's about all I can handle today. So I'd like to talk about breathing. How are we breathing? We did an art practice retreat yesterday with almost 40 people breathing. And it was called Wondering into Wonder. And we looked at some of the synonyms of what it is to wonder. What is it to have that state of mind of wonder, of not so sure, of curiosity, and how that affects our life when we can bring that state of mind to things. And some of the synonyms people expressed was inquiry, amazement, awe, not knowing, fresh, surprise, not so sure, possibility. Possibility. I like that one. Not hope, possibility. I wonder. Is this possible? Is this possible? And so we have to have our breath, a contact with our breath, to wonder. And when I was talking about my lifetime of the expression WTF and how it started out, you know, what the, and all those punctuations, and then it was just what the, and now it's wondrous thus far. Wondrous thus far, when things go, ah, oh, wondrous thus far. WTF. Our current world population is 8.5 billion people, and they say by 2050 it'll be 9.7 billion people. So that's a lot of breathing, besides other creatures on this planet, sharing air and breath. And how do we breathe this planet? Air is a precious resource. We can't live without it. Yeah. Mind is also probably the most precious resource, how we use our mind. And in the retreat, we worked with this sutra of the Buddha, Anapanasati Sutra, the one of the first sutras of the Buddha in the Satipatthana, the foundations of mindfulness. And Buddha taught this right from the beginning. It's working with the breath, very particularly. Focus on the breath as you inhale and exhale. Observe your mind as you breathe in and out. Try to find satisfaction in your mind as you breathe in and out. Try to compose your mind as you breathe in and out. Try to liberate your mind as you breathe in and out. And so in the art practice, something I've been working with for a while is based on breath, breathing into expression, which we all are doing. We're breathing into our expression of our humanity, breathing into as we practice a right view, a right speech, as best we can, right intentions, seeing how the breath changes in accord with what that is. And the beginning practice that we all receive is coming in contact with the breath and beginning instruction. Some of you just received that. And it's held in focus through counting. And the instruction is to try as much as you can to surrender to your breath, to make contact with it, and then follow it in. Count one, exhale, two. So you can really be precise and focused on the breath and see where we might go off and be able to have an anchor to come back to. And we're encouraged in this method to not control, but just, we've been doing it since we've been born. So we never were self-conscious about our breath. It was just, now we're sort of self-conscious in this practice of following it and seeing what's in between. Can we just breathe, or are we taken away into narratives and stories and into our mind? And when is that helpful, and when do we get lost? And most of us are really good at controlling, at least I am, and we'd like to get a little better at controlling. So sometimes we ride the breath, sometimes we push it along and help it out. And sometimes we might hear we have to breathe deeply in order to do the breath practice. But it's really letting the breath be what it is and not controlling it. And that's really hard, because if we have this idea, we have to somehow be doing deep breaths. And that's not what's happening. There's the control there, right? So it's not about deep breathing. If we're noticing that it's short and shallow, that's pretty profound to see that. So this Anapanasati Sutra, Anapana means in-breath and out-breath. And Sati means mindfulness or present moment awareness that simply notices what's happening without interfering in any way, without adding or subtracting anything to or from the experience. So it's bare awareness, just bare awareness, not adding, not subtracting. And we say, as you're noticing a thought arise, to not suppress, right? Don't say it hasn't arisen or you don't like it, judge it. Just see it for what it is. And don't deny it, and don't supply it. So we can look at both, how we might do one or the other, and just to let it be. It means mindfulness while breathing in and out. That's the Buddha's first teaching. Mindfulness while breathing in and out. And mindfulness is something we hear a lot. It said it's used in the sutra to emphasize this extraordinary capacity we have as humans to be mindful. And it can only happen in the present. Past is a memory. It's unbiased, not for or against anything. Mindfulness, it's not for or against anything. Like a mirror, it doesn't judge what it reflects. Has no other goal than seeing itself. Doesn't try to add on to what's happening or subtract to improve it in any way. It's not detached. like a person standing far away from experience. I remember Daito Roshi saying when he was a photographer, there was a moment he was learning how to do movement with photography, and they brought in a dance teacher, and he refused. He's like, no, I'm not starting to dance with my camera in the field. I don't want to do that. And he detached, and then he went to his room, and with a super strong lens, he photographed what was happening down there from his room. So it's not that. We're not far away from it. We're not observing with binoculars or a strong lens from a distance. We're right there, very present. Buddha said it's a form of participation. Mindfulness is fully living our lives awake in the midst of it, and it's not limited to a meditation hall. So it's not just when we come here and then we go out and, you know, all hell breaks loose. We're just out the window. No more mindfulness. And so we can use it on a very simple process like breathing or highly charged situations and unpleasant emotions like fear, loneliness. You know, when somebody says, take a deep breath, that's a profound teaching. Take a deep breath. And you feel it instantly. So it can just follow us into very ordinary life situations, mindfulness, especially mindfulness of breathing. And eventually it becomes a way of living rather than a technique. So it takes time and it takes some training. It takes practice. So here we are. Anyway, in Chinese calligraphy, the word mindfulness has two characters, and the top character is a shelter, which represents the word now, like right here, home, now, shelter, right here. And below is the character for heart, shin, heart, mind. So it's bringing the heart into the shelter of the present. That's mindfulness. And it's interesting because I think I said this before, the Chinese characters for busyness, the top character for busyness is killing. And below is heart mind. So busyness is heart killing, heart and mind killing. And I was curious, when did that practice get introduced, that with numbers, with counting with numbers? Because the Buddha didn't start with counting the breath. He was just offering breathing in, I know I am breathing in. Breathing out, I know I am breathing out. So when you go upstairs, you'll see on the wall in the Buddha hall, that's what we started with in the art practice, was breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I know I'm breathing out. And we just sat with that, and then they picked up something to draw with, and then breathing in, breathing out. So you'll see that representation of that upstairs. But the number counting process, it said, in the Soto school of Zen, counting breath is called Sushoku, number breath viewing. Counting one while breathing in, two while breathing out. And although the word is used to refer to anapasanati in a general way, was considered by Dogen a holdover from the Hinayana, the Theravada, in which Buddha was from the elder school, although Keizan Zenji recommended it, and today it is still cultivated within the Soto school. So Keizan continued breath counting. The Rinzai school also teaches it to beginning students. These are two schools of Zen, Rinzai and Soto. One has koan study as its focus, the Rinzai school, and Soto school usually uses shikantaza, just sitting. It says, the Rinzai school teaches it to beginning students. The usual method is counting the exhalation up to 10 and again from 1. starting up again from one if you lose count, or you see yourself get carried away, you return to one. So they do that same kind. By bringing the attention continually to the count, the student learns to keep from being distracted. It also teaches the importance of good posture and breathing, because our posture affects our breath. You know, if we're hunched over, it's making a cut in the line. But when we're upright, there's an energy that is flowing round like your lungs almost. And those make counting easier. In breath counting, the student enters koan. Even then, some masters will still recommend they go back to counting as a way to assist koan meditation. And sometimes students complain, and it sounds like a complaint. They'll come in and, "I'm still working on the breath." And I'm like, "Can you drop the still? Like, you're working on the breath." And, you know, I said that to Dido too. "I'm still working on the breath." And he said to me, he says, "If you can truly give yourself to the breath, it'll take you to the depths you need to go to. And that you can stay on breath practice for your entire life. It's the first thing you do when you're born, and it's the last thing you'll do when you die. So it's a very strong practice." You know, it's like you're on the breath and you feel like, "When am I going to get to the real stuff?" It is. So a little background on the sutta. It said at the end of the rainy season retreat, the Buddha is so pleased with the meditation practice of those gathered with him, he announces he's going to stay on for another month, the month of the white water lily and the white lotus moon, that he'll stay on another month. So the Buddha was practicing in one place because of the rains season during Ango, and nobody could travel, and everyone had access to the Buddha. And he was so pleased that he said, "We're going to continue with this breath practice." And he gave this teaching on the Anapasanati. "Under the full moon at night," the Buddha says, "mindfulness of in and out breathing, when developed and pursued, is of great benefit. Mindfulness of in and out breathing, when developed and pursued, brings the four foundations of mindfulness to perfection." So these four foundations of mindfulness is mindfulness of body, mindfulness of the mind, mindfulness of dharmas, and mindfulness of feeling. Those are the four foundations of mindfulness. So it brings that into more perfection. The four foundations of mindfulness, when developed and pursued, bring the seven factors of awakening to their culmination. And those are mindfulness, investigation of dharmas, energy, rapture, calm, concentration, and equanimity. So those begin to develop and when pursued, and perfect clear insight and liberation. And this keeping the mind on the breath was one of the what he taught more than any other teaching, which is kind of amazing. He says, "It can take us all the way to clear knowledge and release of our suffering and stress just through this breath practice. It can take us all the way through. We can think of it as our home, as a meditator. Each of us may need to go out on excursions to other areas, having other practices and themes for dealing with specific problems and things that come up in the mind that we have to deal with. But it's good to have the breath as our home base, a place to come back to." So Anapasanata is both calming, shamatha, and then insight, vipassana, being able to have insight meditation. And the sutra is divided into four sets of contemplations. So there's 16 contemplations. We just did the first three or four, which I'll share with you. And each set is called a tetrad. And only the first two contemplations are exclusively concerned with the breath. But, of course, the breath is always there throughout our meditation, directly experiencing what's happening right now. So it starts, everyone's sitting, and the Buddha says, the first one, breathing in a long breath. I know I'm breathing in a long breath. Breathing out a long breath. I know I'm breathing out a long breath. And you sit with that. And then breathing in a short breath. I know I'm breathing in a short breath. Breathing out a short breath. I know I'm breathing out a short breath. And each one of these is given some time. The third one is breathing in. I am aware of my whole body. Same with breathing out. The fourth is breathing in. I calm my whole body. Breathing in, this is the fifth, I feel joyful. Breathing out, I feel joyful. Breathing in, I feel happy. Breathing out, I feel happy. It says, they practice like this. I practice like this. Breathing in, I am aware of my mental formations. Breathing out, I practice like this. Breathing in, I calm my mental formations. Breathing out, I calm my mental formations. I practice like this. Breathing in, I'm aware of my mind. Breathing out, I'm aware of my mind. I practice like this. The tenth is breathing in, I make my mind happy and do that breathing out. 11 is breathing in, I concentrate my mind and I do that breathing out. Breathing in, I liberate my mind. Breathing out, I liberate my mind. Breathing in, I observe the impermanent nature of all dharmas. Breathing out, I observe the impermanent nature of all dharmas. Breathing in, I observe the disappearance of desire. Breathing out, I observe the disappearance of desire. I practice like this. Breathing in, I observe the no birth, no death nature of phenomena and do that breathing out. And the 16th, breathing in, I observe letting go. Breathing out, I observe letting go. I practice like this. So this one time the Buddha was speaking about the importance of breath meditation, and a monastic said, well, I practice breath meditation. And the Buddha asked them, what kind of breath meditation do you practice? And they said, well, I put aside thoughts of the past, don't hanker after thoughts of the future, and keep my breath in equanimity in the present as I breathe in and out. And the Buddha said, well, there is that kind of breath meditation, but it isn't the most beneficial, not the most productive. And then he went on to teach those 16 steps. So it's good to know the steps because, he says, they are the most effective ways of making the breath your home base as a refuge or shelter. There was so what did we do yesterday? We breathed, and then, oh, we had a conversation with our breath. This was interesting. So we had little tags, sticky tags, labels, and we had a partner across from us, and you could ask the partner anything you wanted to, but you had to write it, no talking. Whatever you wanted to ask them, you wrote it down, and then you stuck it on their side. And then you watched their response through what they did with their drawing materials. And so you watched their body and how they responded to the question. And then you could respond to them if you wanted. Or they got to then ask you a question, stick it on your side, and you responded. And so that went I said just three, but this thing blew open. And then we were asking other people questions. And then we went around and looked like what was being asked. You know, like, what's your anger look like? How are you right now? Do you like your name? All kinds of questions. And I was thinking, I said to them, like, what would it be like to be like in a board meeting or something? Or have a difficult conversation with someone where you knew like the language just was just going to get you all tangled up. And you started off with this, you know, ceremony, and you just said, here's what I want to ask, and you stuck it on their side. And then they responded. And then it's like back, and just it went on like that for a while. So I read this piece. I found this by Lee Young Lee, who's a poet, and I thought this was an interesting interview. The interviewer asked, when you speak of breath, how are breath and poems related? And Lee says, poems and breath are related in basically the same way that breath and utterance are related. That is, when we speak, we use the outgoing breath, that exhaled breath. The exhaled breath is the dying breath, while the inhaled breath is the infeeding breath. So all human utterance is our dying breath articulated. The interviewer says, and the inhale, do we inhale the poem with our breath? And Lee said, well, let me back up and try to answer like this. Breathing is a wheel. It turns in and out. Inhale, exhale. I don't want to get too esoteric here, but I'll mention the fact that as we inhale, our bones and muscles actually get very compacted, harder. When we exhale, on the other hand, our bodies become very soft. Ancient Taoists, so I'm told, believe that upon inhalation, our ego self becomes very inflated. While during exhalation, our sense of ego and body diminishes, and we become more open to a deeper, bigger perspective on the exhale. Our sense of ego and body diminishes, and we become more deeper, bigger presence. What I find of interest, though, is this. As we speak, what we mean gets disclosed in opposite ratio to the expelled breath. That is, as breath dies in exhalation while we speak, more and more of the meaning of what we are saying gets divulged. Frost calls this the tribute of the current to the source. Blake called it proceeding by contraries. Meaning is born as the breath dies. In the case of poetry, the meaning that gets born is manifold. Saying one thing, but meaning many things. And in this way, a poem is a paradigm of human living. As we perish, the meaning of our lives is revealed. Interesting. We are practicing and learning how to create breathing comfortably and create a sense of well-being that doesn't depend on things outside. Because when it feels good breathing in and out, we're likely to be much less irritable. You can explore this in yourself. Much less likely to feel oppressed by situations around us. So when things are going go badly, a little insane, inside or outside, we don't feel like things are weighing in. We feel like things are weighing in on us. We don't feel that way when we connect with our breath because we've got our own space right here. We can breathe in and out comfortably and be insane, insanity in that breath, in ourself. It's an act of kindness when we're coming from a comfortable spot here. Comfortable sensations in the body, breathing comfortable, we are less likely to act on greed, anger, aversion, delusion, all those juicy ways that we do to act unskillfully with others. And people will suffer less from our stuff. So that teaching of take a deep breath before speaking. The Buddha used to say, count to 10 before you say something. If you don't, it's not clear. Yeah. Whatever our practice is, to make sure we're at our home base as much as we can, that we're coming back to how we breathe, and be generous with that. Just tell yourself you've got this breath. This breath coming in, this breath going out. That's all there is this breath. When they come, when they go, we're done with them. There's only this breath. Not Christian or Jew or Muslim, not Hindu, Buddhist, Sufi, or Zen, not any religion or cultural system. I am not from the east or the west, not out of the ocean or up from the ground, not natural or ethereal, not composed of elements at all. I do not exist, am not an entity in this world or in the next, did not descend from Adam and Eve or any origin story. My place is placeless, a trace of the traceless, neither body nor soul. I belong to the beloved. Having seen the two worlds as one and that one call to and know, first, last, outer, inner, only that breath-breathing human being. Hope we can just keep breathing. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.